Indonesia.
The Durango 95 purred away real horror show. A nice, warm, vibratory feeling all through your gutty woods. Soon it was trees and dark, my brothers. With real country dark.
No, no, don't do that. If you shoot him, you'll just make him mad.
You want to die out here, huh?
Well, then die. I tell you what, I'm not gonna die.
Not sorry.
I'm not gonna die. No, I'm gonna kill the bear. Say it, I'm gonna kill the bear. Say it, I'm gonna kill the bear. Say it. Say I'm gonna kill the bear. Say it.
I'm gonna kill the bear.
Say it again.
I'm gonna kill the bear.
And again. I'm gonna kill the bear! Good. What one man can do, another can do.
What one man can do, another can do.
Say it again.
What one man can do, another can do.
Say it again.
What one man can do, another can do.
Yeah. You're goddamn right.
Time to pay the fiddler. Every damn night.
And it's the fucking dark web. Is there anybody hiding there in the dark?
Mouth to mouth, wherever you are.
I'll rip out your eyes and piss on your brain.
Now, Mr. Evil.
Dr. Evil. I didn't spend 6 years in evil medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much.
Are you lost, sweetheart? Are you afraid, honey?
Can't just go around doing whatever you feel like. You can't. There are rules in life.
There happens to be a lot about me that you don't know, Mr. Smarty Man.
You gotta do something or just stand there and bleed.
You doing it or watching it? I used to feel real on a show.
Well, that's quite a way to start the show.
Cheerful.
There we go. Welcome back, Derek Gary, Real Horror Show, Episode 5. Stones in the background. This is a little remix of Sympathy for the Devil.
Nice.
Arguably the greatest song about the devil. What do you think?
Running with the Devil's up there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I probably got to go with this one.
It's a good one. Max Romeo is up there, Chase the Devil.
Yeah.
And I got some other songs about the devil in here for our breaks. We'll do a couple. We'll do three or four, maybe.
Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yeah. Classic. Devil is Busy in Your Backyard. Traveling Wilburys. Not bad. Devil in the Blue Dress.
Devil in the Blue Dress. Although that's, I don't know that that's necessarily about the devil.
Sure it is.
No.
It's a devil that...
No, well,
when I think of the devil, I think of Elizabeth Hurley.
Yeah.
I think of Bedazzled Devil Elizabeth Hurley. That's what keeps me up at night. The Bedazzled Elizabeth Hurley Devil. Yeah. So how you doing?
Better than last week, I'll tell you that.
You feeling better?
I'm feeling better. It is extremely rare for me to slow down for anything.
Yeah.
It's extremely rare for
you
me.
You are always busy. You have a very tight schedule as I.
Yep. It's extremely rare for me to have any kind of an illness that knocks me off my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And last Monday, Columbus Day, I was in bed all day.
Yeah.
And I had a fever. And because we put this show together on Tuesdays, I had to make the call, you know, Monday, basically saying, am I going to be there or am I not? And I said, I don't know where I'm going to be tomorrow. I don't know where I'm going to be Wednesday.
Yes.
As far as this thing goes, I don't know what it is. So I made the call and said, I'm checking out this one.
All understandable. Winston Kidd came in all the way from the great state of Rhode Island.
Nice.
And we talked about zombies a little bit. We'll talk more tonight since I didn't want you to miss Zombie Week completely.
Well, we've got
and there's a good release.
Return of Living Dead just came out on 4K.
Yeah.
So there's something to talk about with zombies right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear everyday horrors. We have to talk about COVID again because right now, what I heard, Michael Moore, you're in good company. Michael Moore got the COVID and he had like the B4, the B19 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
the B-22 bomber, whatever it's called now, the BA-1946X.
BA-11, I think, is the one that we're looking out for now.
Yeah. So he said, you know, he was drumming it up on his podcast, coughing every couple of seconds and sure. stuff, saying how, you know, you almost made it, blah, blah, blah. So he's really kind of, you know, acting it up like he usually does. But he said he did talk to his doctor, and I kind of believe him with this one. He said, well, how contagious is this one coming up? And he's like, well, if there's oxygen in the room, there's COVID.
Great.
We're in trouble.
Great.
We're in for another treat here.
I need that.
Yeah. And you've had a pretty good run so far.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. I almost got the 3 years, but no. I had it come to my door and three different people.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I fell, and I fell hard. I even went to the woods. I'm like, I'm going to the woods.
Yeah.
I left the house. I'm like, I'm out of here.
It's too late.
And I got to the woods. It was too late.
Once they're in your house coughing, it's all over.
Yeah.
My office, they're, you know, trying to get everybody back in. And,
sure.
You know, so I'm going back to the office a few days a week. Now I got clients coming in, and it's like, yeah, I want to be in an office with someone who just got off an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, we're probably heading back up to, you know, DEF CON High or whatever it is.
Yeah, we're going down. Yep.
Another week or two. It's in New York and New Jersey and
yeah.
showing up in Vermont, New Hampshire.
We're seeing more masks.
It'll be here next.
Yeah, we're seeing more masks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, more and more every single day.
So we're gonna keep doing this in the event that happens. We're just going to pre-record the show.
Yeah.
And
hopefully the DJ before us
pray
will play.
Yeah. Pray that it airs. It'll be on at like 4 a.m. We'll let you know.
Yeah.
When it's actually the make good happens.
You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna post it to the Podomatic again, I think, just in case.
Yeah.
We'll post the past shows there too, and get a few on there. I have Climbing Devil's Tower in the background. John Williams from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Not a horror movie, a great sci-fi movie, but some very horror moments in there. When Barry gets abducted, oh my God.
Yeah.
How scary is that? Like seeing your little boy being taken away by the aliens.
And it's all just a rack of lights on a pipe.
Yeah.
And somebody shaking the set is how he did all of that.
Yeah. The screws unturning. That's what did it for me. And the orange lights. Oh, my God. Yeah. And the little kid's great at it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's terrified.
Super effective scene. The one with not Roy Scheider. The other guy.
Fire in the Sky? No one?
No.
That abduction?
No. No, the scene early on. Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss, yeah.
Where he's in the truck.
Yes.
And the truck rotates.
Oh, yes. Fantastic.
Is another one of those moments that's,
yeah.
Wow, this is great horror.
Yeah, yeah. I love Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I think that one's getting kind of lost in the mix over the years for Spielberg, but I love it. It's a great, great movie.
Carlo Rambaldi did the big alien.
Yeah, nice. Movie. Yeah, and I mean, what great aliens in that, too. And that's kind of what we kind of think what an alien would look like, and it's kind of, you know, that's... Even Lego made a Lego out of the Close Encounters of the 13 alien, the little ones, you know, which is pretty cool. So everyday horrors. Let's hear yours for this week.
Man.
I think mine's minor compared to yours.
So let's do yours first because mine is.
I had one even on the way over here. What's happening to our change? What's happening to the economy? Why do none of these places take cash or coins anymore?
Oh, it's because nobody wants to touch money anymore.
You think it's part of the COVID? I think it's an excuse to get rid of coins altogether.
I've got a 30-pound box of coins sitting in my home office.
Is it silver, though, or is it just coins?
It's coins.
They just throw them out. They're not even worth anything anymore.
But they are. It's a 30-pound box of coins.
Yeah,
There's like $150 in there.
Well, you used to be able to go into the bank, and you could throw them in there, and they'd give you the money. They'd give you a little ticket for it, which was cool.
Yeah.
In the old days, I used to roll them up all the time. I used to have a big, giant, like 4-foot Coca-Cola bottle tank, bank, rather. And I'd put all my loose change in it every time I came home. And by the end of the year, when the thing filled up, it was like, man, $400, $500, $600 and they'd go to Foxwoods.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was rolling up those coins in order to do it. I'm like, hey, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, I'm rolling coins.
I usually...
Drinking beers.
Then we got the Coinstar. And the Coinstar was great. But then Coinstar started charging like,
expensive.
10-12% processing coins. It's like, wait a second. There was a gas station near me that had this machine called a CoinMax.
Yeah.
And they never raised their processing fee.
Yeah.
So it was always like 4.8%.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll pay 5 cents on the dollar not to have to roll these things.
Yeah.
And you just go in there, dump your coins, and boom, here's some cash. You're done.
Yeah.
You know, usually I do it right after Thanksgiving, and that becomes the extra Christmas money.
Yeah, I did it around Thanksgiving over at my grandparents' house. That's how I started my rolling coins career.
Yeah.
I would be over there, and I'd roll a bunch of pennies, and if I found any Wheaties, I got to keep them.
Nice.
That's what the payment was. So my grandparents would let me keep all the Wheaties, and I'd have the magnifying glass out, and I'm like, look, hey, it's a 1919, and I'd show it to my grandmother or grandfather, and they couldn't see it, of course, because I didn't realize they were over 40, and you lose your vision at 40, pretty much.
I wish my wife would learn that.
Yeah.
She's waving a laptop around saying, can you see this? And it's like, no,
yeah.
I can't.
Yeah. All of a sudden, like overnight, at one point after your 40s, you get to look for, there's another everyday horror. I don't think, I might have talked about this the first week, but all of a sudden, bifocals happen.
Yeah.
Like right away. Like, I can't see anything anymore. Like, I went to, you know, look at the receipt at a restaurant, and I'm like, I can't read that anymore. And I thought it was just maybe a little hazy vision with the phone and stuff. And I'm like, no.
Ew.
I went blind overnight.
Yeah.
Something happened. Something's amiss.
Yeah, these, I need new glasses very, very badly. Yeah. So you needed change. You didn't have change.
Yeah. No, I didn't need change. I just noticed there was a sign up at the Target that says this does not dispense change. So I have to sit in a line. Okay. So I guess this is part of my everyday horror. I have to sit in a line of 12 people that have to fumble around to get their cards out and try to make them work and put them in every which way. Does it have a chip? Does it have the slot? Does it have the swipe? And most people, it's like, how do you not know how to use a credit card at this point? I'm like, for God's sake, we've been doing these automated things for years. I had stand-up joke going back to like 2002, 2003 about going into Taco Bell and having to press the buttons to order your food. And I'm like, what's next? Are they going to be like, hey, let me give you the seeds? Well, you can plant your own lettuce and you come back and you can get the taco.
Right.
You know, it was a dumb joke. But I'm just like, this is where it's actually become. It's become, let's have the least amount of employees possible to have no payroll. And it doesn't really matter because we have everything on the cameras. And if there's a miss swipe, we have that person's credit card. We know exactly who it is. So, you know, it is what it is.
Well, they couldn't get employees if they wanted them because nobody wants to work in retail anymore because it doesn't pay anything.
Right, right.
And it's just nonstop aggravation.
Yeah. Yeah. In the background, Everlast with Santana. Another great one. All the sin is it puts your lights on.
So I had a bad one this week.
Yeah.
So Saturday, beautiful day. So we go up to Rockport.
Beautiful place, Rockport.
Yeah, love Rockport. Love going up there. It's me and the wife and the kid. And unfortunately, if you're thinking of going up there, fair warning, the majority of the food and ice cream stands are closed. So the ones that are still open all have half-hour lines.
Oh, of course.
And it's, you know, we'd already had lunch, so that's not a big deal. But we're up at the neck, and I wanted the kid to see the it's high tide, the waves are breaking. I wanted the kid to see the water crashing.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So we're over there standing there.
Motif number one.
Yeah. B comes by. B is flying around at eye level.
Uh-oh.
I'm holding Bobby in my arms. B is flying around at eye level in that way that yellow jackets like to do when they want to annoy you.
Oh, sure. Were you near a seafood place or ice cream stand or anything?
No, we're out on the neck. We're near the
okay.
We're
near the
parked cars.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I'm like, I could bat the thing away, but, you know, we'll just let it do what it's doing, and usually they go away. They get tired, and they go do something else.
Sure.
The next thing I know, I hear shrieking.
Oh.
My son is tensing up in my arms. He's batting at his eye. I'm like, oh, God, the thing stung him in the eye.
Oh.
The worst part of this, for those of you who are parents, you know this. You're out in a public place. Everything's quiet. Everybody's having a good time. And all of a sudden, a child starts shrieking in agony. Every parent turns to look at you with daggers in their eyes.
Yeah.
Because
they assume
you have hit the kid.
Oh, boy.
And they're like, what did you do to that child?
Oh, boy.
And it's the bee sting.
Yep.
Fortunately, the one saving grace in all of this is that he managed to knock the bee off before the stinger came loose.
Oh, wow.
So he didn't wind up taking
Bobby.
He didn't wind up taking a full sting from it.
Yeah.
But it stung him just below the eye.
Ugh.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, please not the eyeball. Please not the eyeball. Please not the eyeball. And it wasn't. It stung
Awful.
Him just below the eye. But then it's, now, this is his first bee sting.
Yeah.
And as parents will tell you, until the kid gets stung, you don't know if the kid's allergic.
That's right. Yeah.
So for the next 2 hours, you're sitting there looking for any possible sign of anaphylactic shock.
Sure.
And it swelled up a bit, and it turned funny colors on Sunday, but that was it. And now, you know, by last night, everything was back to normal, and he's fine. So that's all good.
Yeah.
But he did not enjoy that experience. Nobody does, you know. And it's like
awful.
The one of the previous times that we took him up there, he's running around. He fell off a curb, landed on his face, and scraped his face.
Yeah.
And it's like every other time we take him up there, he gets hurt.
To Rockport?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like he likes it up there, but, you know, I'm going to take him up there if he keeps getting hurt every time he goes there.
Oh, well.
But that moment when the child starts to scream and all the parents' eyes are on you.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, wait, I can't deal with you right now. I'm dealing with a crying child.
Yeah. And the ones to be really worried about are the ones that don't look at you at all.
Yeah.
Because you're wondering, how bad is their life?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, oh, I'm sorry for Bobby. That's too bad. I'm glad he's doing all
right. So we went down to the general store. I got him some Matchbox cars, and all was good.
Nice.
That's about all the time that it took for him to get over it.
That's all right. That's a score.
Yeah.
You can get a couple of Matchbox. I'd take a couple of Matchbox cars back then for a sting, maybe.
He did, you know. I was mentioning bees to him for the next day or so. You know, I was explaining to him that, you know, bees aren't mean. That bee was a jerk.
Yeah, yeah.
And every now and again, he'd connect it and he'd start to get a little bit upset.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think he's got like a full-on fear of bees from this.
Right.
But I think he's going to be a little more wary around them. And he was already a little wary around them to begin with.
Yeah. You ever see that movie, The Swarm?
Yeah.
Remember that one?
It's not good.
No, it's not.
It's not good.
But that wasn't that like the 70s or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Swarm of bees, awful. I have a friend, she ended up doing a whole bunch of bees in the backyard, you know, and making honey and things like that.
I've been attacked by swarms twice.
Yep.
And I do not recommend it.
Yeah.
Because having a swarm of bees stinging you is not a good time.
No. And insects, there's more than just the bees that swarm.
Yeah.
You get the ants, honeybees, of course. What else swarms?
Did you hear about the thing out in Western Mass?
Cockroaches swarm? No.
I think it was in Longmeadow. They were trying to evict somebody from a house.
Oh, no.
And this woman who didn't live in the house showed up with beehives.
Oh, my God. Really?
And, like, kicked over one of the beehives. So the bees are all coming out and stinging everybody.
What?
And she then puts on a beekeeper suit.
No way.
And moves the hive to the front entrance of the house.
Wow.
And she's kicking it again to make the bees come out.
That is wild.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
So she got arrested for assault and battery.
It's a deadly weapon.
With
right?
a deadly weapon.
It's a it's more than a deadly weapon.
Some of the people there were allergic to bees.
Wow.
Like one guy had to go to the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she was being evicted.
It wasn't her house.
It wasn't her house. She was home. Was she homeless or like was
no,
she just
she's got
a bees. Squatter?
She obviously lives somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But she must have known the woman that whoever lived in the house and decided that she was going to go stop the eviction with her bees.
Wow. I'll tell you something though. The people that do that eviction stuff, man, they're usually the scum of the earth too. So they could take a shot or two.
Yeah.
I remember two guys waking me up. It was like 3:30 in the morning. I was like 26 years old, banging on my door. I was living in Lowell above a pizza shop, actually, at Highland Pizza. And these guys are like, let us in. I'm like, I don't even know who you are, right? And I had a couple of drinks, you know, that night with a couple of friends. I'm like, who the hell are these guys? And what they were doing is they were repossessing a Trans Am that was outside that somebody didn't pay for. And they're like, oh, is this you, this your car? I'm like, no, good night, right? And, they kept on banging on the door. I'm like, guys, get out of here. And they're like, oh, let us. I'm like, I don't know you. I'm like, I'm not letting you into the building.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, man, what jerks. They need some bees.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cockroaches. Locusts. I got stuck in a locust swarm once. I wrote about it, actually. It was awesome. It was crazy, but it was awesome. It really was. It was crazy. I mean, like a locust. Oh, I'm sorry. They were butterflies.
Oh. Yeah, butterflies.
They were butterflies.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I was in Kansas, and they were going across that route that goes across 70, I think.
Yeah.
And this was like 96, and there was just like a little flutter and like a splat against the windshield, and then another and another and another, and then hundreds of them. What had happened was these butterflies migrate from Canada down to Mexico.
Right.
And I just happened to be crossing the highway the same time they were going down to Mexico, and so was everybody else.
Yeah.
Everybody started putting on their wipers,
yep.
Going to the side of the road. The horns went on, the lights. I could not see out my windshield in about maybe 3 or 4 minutes. My entire windshield, I couldn't see anything. It was all butterfly guts.
Wow.
And these are all like monarchs. So it's orange, it's blue, it's black, it's yellow. And so I pull into this gas station. And the gas station, I mean, like they had seen this before, I guess. Everybody's just like casually washing off their windshields, you know? And I'm just like, did you guys see those butterflies? You know, I'm like 25, 26. So I'm just like, I almost freaking got killed from a butterfly swarm. And they were just like, oh, yeah, they migrate. I'm like, it was just like a common thing. That's one thing that's fun about. Yeah, it's one thing that's fun about traveling. And it's also scary about traveling. You go out and there's things that happen in these states that you wouldn't even think about.
Oh, yeah.
You know, living in Massachusetts, you're like, what? It's like, oh, they're just werewolves. You know, it's like the American Werewolf in London. It's like you go into the Slaughtered Lamb and everybody knows about the werewolves except the stupid Americans, you know.
I almost learned about the climbing lane for trucks the hard way in Colorado.
Yeah, yeah. That's a rough one, too.
As I came screaming up the highway at 70 miles an hour to find a truck moving 10 miles an hour in front of me.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what that's for.
Yeah. I remember in Colorado, too, man, that was an interesting drive, too. I was in there. I went driving right through the night, and I was going to visit my friend in Idaho Springs, Colorado. And I was driving for hours and hours, and I realized I'd been driving hours for hours uphill because I look at my, you know, odometer and I'm going like 20 on a highway. And then I'm like, geez, I've been doing this for at least 2 or 3 hours. And I see the elevation. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm like way up here.
Yeah.
It was pretty wild.
I got stuck on the I-70 in back of a Winnebago.
Mm.
And those of you who've driven the I-70 westbound, it's the same way eastbound, but those of you who've driven the I-70 westbound know that it is two lanes wide and there's a little guardrail and then there's doom on the other side of the guardrail. That's it.
Yep.
If you miss the guardrail or cross the guardrail, you're done.
Yeah.
You're going off the side of a mountain and nobody's going to find you. This Winnebago was just wide enough that you could not comfortably pass it on a curve.
Yeah.
And there aren't a heck of a lot of straightaways on that stretch of the I-70. So I'm in back of this guy for like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Trying to find that opening to get past it. Meanwhile, traffic's backing up behind us. Everybody's got the same problem.
Yeah.
You know, the Winnebago shouldn't be out there because it's too wide. And the guy's got to crawl up the mountain at like 30 miles an hour because he's driving this giant thing.
Sure.
And it's, you know, what we really need is to ban them from that stretch of highway.
Yeah.
Or at least make them narrower so that you can pass them without, you know, risking oblivion.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. I'd like to go to Devil's Tower. You ever go there? We were talking about Close Encounters.
I haven't been to Wyoming.
No.
Is
that where it is?
Yeah.
In Wyoming?
It's in Wyoming. Yeah. It's Wyoming is one of those states that unless you got a reason to be there, like skiers all go to Wyoming. Mm-hmm. But unless you got a reason to be there, you're probably not going to Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason why the millionaires have all moved to Wyoming is because nobody goes there.
Sure.
Like Jackson, Wyoming, I think is the richest zip codes per capita in the United States of America.
Interesting.
Because when COVID hit, they already had a bunch of millionaires living there, like more of them moved in.
Hmm. I don't know. I'd like to go. I bet it would be fun to live on a ranch.
I've got a client out there and it's, you know, it's beautiful country.
He's got a ranch?
Everybody's got a ranch.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Because you can go out there and get like...
And a bucking horse.
You can get 100 acres for like 20 bucks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, here, it's yours.
Get a pack of Stampede cigarettes and head out to Wyoming.
Make sure you're not around when the bison come through. You know, that's...
Yeah. I bet you Kevin Costner lives in Wyoming. You seem like a kind of guy that would live there.
Harrison Ford lives in Wyoming. I know that.
Yeah.
Kevin Costner has got a ranch... Because he's on that show that everybody watches, the
Yellowstone.
Yellowstone, is that it?
Yeah, I started it.
Yeah,
it's okay.
He's got a ranch somewhere because they were talking to him on CBS at his ranch, and it's what you would expect.
Yeah, it's in Chelsea,
and I believe it's near the set of the film.
Yeah.
So he's got this giant ranch with horses on it.
That's probably why he agreed to do it.
Yeah, he's river like, running through it, and it's like lives on the ranch.
Could film right outside in my backyard. Doesn't have to do anything. To him, it's working from home for him.
Yeah, goes and rides horses all day long.
Yeah, he works remotely.
Yeah.
Kevin Costa works remotely from his own ranch. Hey, is the other thing I was thinking about, too, you know? A lot of people are getting the long-term COVID, too. That's another everyday horror. They're down with the LTC. Down with LTC. I think I should redo that song. Down with LTC, except the long-term COVID. If it comes back, maybe I'll whip something together.
It'll come back.
Yeah.
That's the one thing we can be sure about with the COVID.
It's like a Friday the 13th sequel. It always comes back every year or two. Remember, we used to have those things every year. Same with the Nightmare on Elm Street. Those were coming one after another, and then they just stopped.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we're going to talk about birthdays, a Hellraiser. Which one do you want to talk about first?
You tell me which.
Why don't we talk about Hellraiser a little first? You watched the remake?
I have not watched the remake.
You haven't? You rewatched the originals.
I rewatched the originals.
Let's talk about Happy Birthday to Me then.
Okay.
Because we both watched that.
Okay.
This past week.
What?
Right?
Did you watch the remake?
No, I watched the original.
Oh.
Did you watch the remake?
No. I'm talking about Hellraiser. Did you watch
Hellraiser? I watched the remake and the originals.
What? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why anyone would.
Yeah.
Happy Birthday to Me.
The original.
The original.
From 1980.
I think the remake was called Happy Birthday to You or something, wasn't it?
I think so. There's birthday in there. I know that.
Yeah. And then there's Happy Death Day to You, too.
There's Happy Death Day, yes. But Happy Birthday to Me, the way that they marketed it, was they had six of the strangest deaths you will ever see in a film.
Yeah.
And are they really that strange?
Well, you know, you're not a gore guy. So,
not really.
You know,
no.
When you tell me that you're sitting down to watch a movie, I know that there's not going to be a lot of gore in it.
Yeah.
And this is one that I hadn't seen it in a number of years. The thing about this film for me is it's one of those in-between horror movies.
Yeah.
There are horror movies that you love because they're scary or they're creepy or they're over the top. And there are horror movies that you love because they're so bad they're good.
Yeah.
Other than the score.
The score is phenomenal.
For Happy Birthday to Me.
It's good.
Which is just some guy beating on a piano.
It's good.
Trying to scare people with his music.
It's good, though.
It's atrocious.
You don't like it?
At no point in time does it match the action on the film.
But it's creepy enough. It's definitely creepy.
Yeah. But it's like you look at the score and you're like, this score and this movie are two different things. Other than that score, it's really kind of an in-between film.
Yeah.
It's a film that desperately wants to be a giallo. And it's got the black gloved killer and the razor blade and all of those trappings about it.
Yeah.
But all it can manage to do is just pile on MacGuffin after MacGuffin after MacGuffin.
I agree there.
Until you get to the end and
you're like, almost none of that made sense. It's like basically everybody's high that saw the movie. They're not going to remember anyway.
Yeah, it takes this wild left turn that you didn't see coming because there is no foreshadowing of it.
Here's the thing, though, for me. I'm watching it, and as I continue to watch it, as it makes more no sense. I must have seen this movie at least four or five times in my life.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it in a long time, but I remembered it. The one thing I didn't remember, and they do a good job at this, is you're not sure who the killer is. It could be the main person, who is the girl from Little House on the Prairie.
Melissa Sue Anderson.
And she's good in it.
She's adorable.
Yeah, and everybody else is pretty good in it. You have Superman's dad in it from 1978, that actor. I forget what his name is, but he's really good in it. You also have the kid from Meatballs in it that was with Bill Murray, who played one of the camp counselors, and I think he was in Breaking Away, maybe. And they're all pretty good, but what I was thinking about this and how I would give this a thumbs up for people to watch, it is available on Tubi, or Tubi, whatever you want. I like to call it Tubi. And one thing I'd like to promote about Tubi there is they do a really good job with not interrupting your movie. It's free. You don't have to sign up for an account. If you decide not to sign up for the account, you just can't restart in the same spot. You can't go away and come back, which I like because that's how movies are supposed to be watched. You're not supposed to go away and do the laundry or go downstairs. It's especially the experience of a horror movie. There's actual tension and buildup and then boom, scare, and then tension, buildup, boom, scare. You know, it's like you're not supposed to watch these like an MTV video, you know, and it's always entertaining. That's what I was going to say. It's always entertaining.
If you sign up for an account, which I finally took the plunge, they don't bombard you.
Tubi?
I get an email from them like once a week, which is like, here's what's new, or we're still saving this, or what have you.
Yeah.
Melissa Sue Anderson is adorable in this movie. She very clearly had a no nudity clause in her contract.
Yeah, she shows off in her bra or something at one point.
Because she's still doing Little House on the Prairie.
Right.
Around the time that this movie gets made. And clearly, they're like, you're not going to go up to Canada and flash your boobs for a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
So she's very chaste through the whole thing. And the kids in this movie, as you often get in horror movies, are trying their best. They're acting because this for them is a stepping stone in their career.
Mm-hmm.
The older actors in this film, not so much.
Yeah.
They know the score. They're like, I'm getting horror movie money to do a horror movie. This is it's a Canadian film.
Yeah.
Which is important to understand because the Canadian horror films have a very different vibe to them than the American horror films.
Mm-hmm.
The Canadian film industry was built primarily by Ivan Reitman and David Cronenberg to make horror movies.
Okay.
That's where they had their first success in global cinema. So without any new Cronenberg movies to work on, you have all these people around who are like, well, we know how to make horror movies.
Yeah.
Let's make more horror movies. I think the problem with Happy Birthday to Me is the director is taking it way too seriously.
Yes and no. I don't think so. Yeah, yes and no. Jay Lee Thompson is the director. I'm not sure what else he directed. I'll check it out.
This is a film that, to me, with a lighter...
He's near the end of his career at this point. So he was born in 1914. The movie came out in 81. So he's 67 years old at this point. He did a bunch of movies in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It looks like one of his last movies was Firewalker.
This is a film that, to me, with a lighter touch... And a little bit of self-awareness of how silly the whole thing is, would have been a fantastic mystery movie.
It is a good mystery movie. I still think it's pretty good. I think it's worth seeing, especially since it's for free on Tubi.
Sure.
It's not bad. I found it entertaining. And there was some laugh-out-loud moments in it. And the other thing is they're likable. I mean, the characters are pretty likable.
The kids are genuinely likable.
Yeah.
But the story is just pure nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, you've got everybody like jumping cars over a drawbridge, and that winds up being very significant later in the film.
Yes.
But it's like for the first 10 minutes of the movie, you're sitting there like, what the heck is going on here?
The part that's really bizarre to me when it starts getting really bizarre for me is when they show that she has had brain surgery.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's like, okay, the brain surgery was maybe a year ago. And she's just the regular walking, talking, normal teenager.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, no. No. It's like, but the other thing is the filmmakers know this is a cheap horror movie. We want to make quick money. And they kind of like, it's almost like slapdash the way they throw it together. Because they set up a lot of stuff that just never pays off, but it just makes no sense to what they do pay off in the ending. Just like the people like, okay, that killer couldn't have been with that person at that time. It doesn't make any sense that person would react to the person that way before they killed them and things like that. But it is entertaining and it's got some great kills in there. There's a shish kebab going through the mouth, which is right on the posters. So not much of a spoiler alert. But who gets a shish kebab in the mouth and dies?
Could have been done better.
Of course.
Could have been done a lot.
And the same thing with the weight scene. He's on the weight bench. Where does all that blood come from the weight bench if you get a weight dropped on you?
But this is one of those movies that like splashes blood on the screen in place of doing actual effects.
Right. I think it's almost like, okay, what we're going to do here is we'll throw a little blood in there and defer the audience effect, and then we'll clip to the next scene.
Yeah.
You know, and I still think it's a good movie. Plus, it's my birthday tomorrow, so why not watch Happy Birthday to Me? And it's a great birthday party she has at the end of the movie.
There's a super, super creepy scene at the end of the movie.
And that's what makes it a good horror movie to me. It does have a good payoff scene at the end. It does wrap up. It doesn't necessarily make sense, but it's good. You have a couple of things happening. And I think, I would say that Wes Craven took a lot from this movie for Scream. Because there's quite a bit in Scream that's similar to this movie, I noticed.
The rough plot outline of Scream is very similar to this.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, who the killer is and what's motivating the killer.
Yeah.
And it does, you know, it gets into that, like, snotty rich kid thing.
Yeah.
At one point. It's interesting.
I think it's worth seeing. But for free, for Tubby, worth seeing.
For me, this is something that would easily slot in as one of my Friday Night Frights and will probably come around as a Friday Night Fright at some point in the future. There's better stuff.
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely better stuff. But for a stalking serial killer, it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, if you want
something. I'd give it a B.
I'd probably
maybe
give it
a B minus.
I'd probably give it B-. C. Like I say, yeah. To me, it's just an in-between film. I want it. I can respect what's there. I want it to be more.
Yeah.
You know, I either want it to be cheaper or sleazier or funnier or it's.
I would attend her birthday party at the end. I would.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Maybe if she takes her top off.
Oh, come on. How old is she now? She's got to be like 70.
I don't know. She still looks pretty much the same.
Yeah. I don't know. Glenn Ford is who I was thinking of before. That's yeah. Superman's dad.
Yeah. Glenn Ford is in this.
This guy did King Solomon's Mines. He directed that. He also directed some stuff from the 60s. Let's see anything. Oh, he directed Cape Fear.
Yeah.
Which is a good movie. He directed Huckleberry Finn, 74, St. Ives, The Passage, Evil That Men Do, Death Wish 4, The Crackdown.
Oh, God.
His last movie was Kinjit, Forbidden Subjects, whatever that is. Bronson movie.
Yeah, I think it's a martial arts Charles Bronson John.
Yeah, yeah. Or is that Kinjete?
Yeah.
Kinjete.
Yeah, it's the
Forbidden Move, yes.
This is one of those movies that back in the video cassette days.
This was considered a video nasty too.
Sold the rental on the cover.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about the movie is what you see on the cover is not
it
actually,
doesn't even happen. It's not doesn't even the happen same in the actor. Movie. It's not yeah. even the same actor.
Doesn't happen in the movie.
No.
But for cover art, I'll give it a 10.
Yeah. They did a good job promoting it. I actually have the trailer. Maybe we'll listen to the trailer. Let's take a little break here. We'll listen to the trailer of Happy Birthday to Me. I'll play a tune and we'll come on back and we'll start talking about Hellraiser. You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. Real Horror Show with Chris Earle and Derek Gary. We are here with you until 7 p.m. Thanks for listening to your freeform station, WMFO in Medford.
Someone's having a party for the top 10, the senior class snobs. Before they get to celebrate, six of them will die in the most bizarre ways you'll ever see.
Virginia, don't go away. Come over here, Virginia.
It is up to you to determine whether you wish to subject yourself to fear, terror, and shock. Because of the bizarre nature of this birthday party, pray you're not invited.
There's another good one, huh? Shaun of the Devil. A great trailer. That trailer sells you.
The trailer sells you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They knew how to market the stuff.
Yeah, they sure did.
In a lot of cases, the marketing is much, much better than the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things that I dive into in my Friday Night Frights series is you take a film like Die, Sister, Die.
Yeah.
Which had this unforgettable trailer with heads coming off and people running around screaming.
Sure.
Every single shot in that trailer is taken from one sequence in the film that is basically a flashback / dream sequence.
Yeah.
And that's the only time the movie ever gets to that level. The rest of it is a really, really boring story about siblings squabbling over an inheritance.
Yeah, yeah.
But you look at the trailer, you're like, oh my God, this looks like the craziest, scariest movie ever made. You turn it on, it's a bunch of people it's two people sitting in a mansion talking to each other for 90 minutes.
Sure.
With this one sequence thrown in.
Yeah. Let's talk about Hellraiser.
Clive Barker.
Clive Barker. Let's talk about the original Hellraiser, and then I'm talking about the new one, what I think of it. Marginal thumbs up.
I doubt that the new one could be.
It has its moments. It's more the background story I liked more than the execution.
So
the executions.
So the thing about Hellraiser, there's a couple of interesting things about Hellraiser.
And Hellraiser's very gory. It's one of the goriest of the gory. It's probably the most gory horror movie that I like.
I was surprised that you brought this up because you're not a gore guy.
Not really.
And
no.
Hellraiser is pretty strong stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when Hellraiser came out, that was what attracted everybody to it. Clive Barker back in the day was what you graduated to when Stephen King wasn't enough anymore.
Right. And he called him the new face of horror.
Because Clive Barker's stuff was much grislier.
Yeah, and disturbing.
And Clive Barker's stuff was about sex.
Yeah, sex. It's all sadomasochistic stuff.
Yeah, Stephen King, like, you know, there's the sex scene in It.
Yeah.
And there's, like, some things here and there.
Yeah.
Clive Barker's on a whole different level.
Yeah.
Clive Barker's, like, you know, Clive Barker is, like, hardcore S&M porn compared to Stephen King's R-rated, you know, nudie scene.
Yeah.
So this was, you know, that was what brought the audiences in. It is a terrible movie.
Really? I like Hellraiser 2 more than 1.
Hellraiser 2 is worse. We'll get to that in a minute.
They're both good movies. They're both good horror movies, I think.
Hellraiser, here's the thing. Apart from the Cenobites,
mm-hmm.
who are brilliant.
Yeah.
And
great, like, great villains.
The kind of thing that gives
very disturbing.
The kind of thing that gives H.R. Giger nightmares.
Yeah.
That's what's great about the Cenobites.
Yeah.
Is they're this weird, like, these incredibly distorted, disfigured, clearly they've had too much of a good time people.
Yeah.
But they're also sexy.
Yeah, I don't know about like that. You think so?
Pinhead and the lead female are sexy.
Oh.
That's part of what makes them so scary, is there is an attractiveness about
them. Well, I think the fact that they're very dominant, right? In the sadomasochistic world, they're like super dominant and dominatrix,
also,
right?
But they're also good-looking people.
Yeah.
Underneath all of everything that's going
right,
on.
Right, and eventually you do get to see them as a normal person, or you get to see Pinhead as a normal person at one point.
The woman in particular who's got a throat that's held open.
Oh, yeah, disgusting.
But the way that the throat is held open is very sexual in nature.
Yeah.
And her entire presence is sort of that stylized 1980s sexy new wave futuristic woman.
I can get into the Borg Queen from like Star Trek, but not this one.
The Borg Queen has that same kind of look going for her. And guess what inspired that?
Sure.
These are the two big takeaways for Hellraiser.
Yeah.
The Cenobites, who are brilliant, and the production design.
Yeah.
This is a movie that I like to call a singularity. Blade Runner is a singularity. Citizen Kane is a singularity. The Wizard of Oz is a singularity.
Yeah.
It's a film that is so influential that shapes everything that comes after it so much.
Yeah.
That you can talk about the time before the movie and the time after the movie. Hellraiser is one of these because the production design in Hellraiser has gone on to influence every horror movie that's been made since.
Sure. I think a lot of the really gory horror movies that came out in the late 90s and early 2000s were all basically made because of Hellraiser.
Yeah. And it's all chains and water and bits of meat thrown around the slaughterhouse floor. That's the production design of Hellraiser.
We've never mentioned Saw, and there's 5 of those, I think, or 6. And that was straight out from this Clive Barker world, I think. Right.
Yeah, Saw refined it a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
First Saw is good. I don't like the rest of them, but
they're
brutal.
It's a little bit like a television series where, like, every year you get a new episode, and it's like, oh, let's go see the new Saw movie and see what's happening with everybody.
I almost feel like I'm dirty watching it. You know, it's just like it's so brutal. I'm like, I feel dirty watching this.
But the plot of Hellraiser is terrible. It's basically
it's a guy that wants power.
It's Little
Frank.
It's Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
You know, kill for me.
Yeah.
He's exploiting the vulnerability of a character to get that character to kill for him so that he can become a more effective monster.
It's supposed to open up a world, it's supposed to open up hell, a door from hell where the Cenobites live, right? And give them some sort of pleasure, some sort of power.
Well, the Cenobites in Clive Barker's stories are these trans-dimensional travelers.
Right.
Who are basically looking for more people to join them, not necessarily for them to become Cenobites, but for them to torture and brutalize for their own personal satisfaction.
Right.
Like, the Cenobites get off on suffering.
Right.
That's a big part of the whole thing is, like, and Frank brings this up. He's the corpse that's walking around for most of Hellraiser.
Yeah, Uncle Frank.
He brings this up. It's like, you have to know extreme pain to understand extreme pleasure.
Yeah.
And for a certain type of outsized Hunter S. Thompson, gotta live life to the fullest personality, the Cenobites are very attractive, and what they offer is very attractive.
Right. That's why he says angels to some and demons to others.
Exactly.
Because some of the people that are into this sadomasochistic stuff, they're literally angels to them because they can provide everything they want. The ultimate extreme of sadomasochism.
So Hellraiser comes about because Clive Barker, for two reasons. Clive Barker hates every adaptation of his stuff, mm-hmm. which he's right to do, because when you read Clive Barker's works, you can see the screenplay. You can see the movie.
Yeah, he got to write this and he directed it.
And then screenwriters would get their hands on it and completely screw it up. And yeah. he's like, what? When he started directing his own stuff, it got better.
Yeah.
Not necessarily this one because it's his first film.
Yeah, it's his first film. He's only in his 30s when he made it.
The other reason that this film happens is because it, at the time that it comes out, the United Kingdom film market is collapsing. Mm-hmm. And this is happening throughout Europe.
It was made cheap, too. It was made for under $1 million.
It was made super cheap.
Yep.
And what they're doing is they're trying to establish franchise horror.
Sure.
Because all the filmmakers are basically... What happens in the 1980s?
Yeah.
Italy, Germany, Spain, Portugal, United Kingdom, doesn't matter where you go. Cable television has arrived.
Right.
Cable television is uncensored.
Right.
Cable television is hungry for content.
Right.
So film producers look at this and say, we can gamble on global cinema.
Right.
And possibly make millions and millions of dollars, or we can take a guaranteed payment
yep.
for a cable film have steady work.
Even more than that, the video industry and going directly to VHS, you would have, a matter of fact, Hellraiser is a perfect example of this because they had the first three, and then like 4 through 9 were all yeah. released direct to video, and they did really well.
Yeah.
You know, for the people that were into Hellraiser, they just went out and they rented or they bought the VHS tapes.
Direct to VHS tended to be more of a North American thing than a global thing.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
overseas, all that stuff just went straight to cable.
Yeah.
But the thing about it was, if you can make this movie for $300,000, it will make a profit.
Yeah.
And we're going to put it out straight on video. We're going to put it on cable. And everybody just gravitated to that because it was steady work. There was sure. no risk involved in it.
Yeah.
What it did, though, was it kicked the stool out from under all of the European film industries.
Mm-hmm.
And countries that had been very active in making movies are suddenly struggling to do anything. So Hellraiser comes along at a time when the UK film industry is sitting there saying, we'd like to have a franchise horror. Because the Halloween and Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street are making tons of money for the Americans.
Yeah.
Why can't we do something? We have Clive Barker. Let him go make this.
Sure.
And that's how this movie even gets made in the first place. That's how this movie is so outrageous.
Yeah.
The problem is they finish it.
That's like Stephen King getting director's job for Carrie, you yeah. know, when he first came out, when they first did an adaptation of his movies.
They finish it, they look at it, and they're like, it will never sell in America because it's too English.
Right.
And it is very English.
Yeah.
So they redubbed half of the actors.
Yeah.
And faked it as an American horror movie.
You got it. This is one thing I wanted to bring up as a theme one week, and we could start with this movie. How great is Uncle Frank as a secondary villain? You know, there's some great secondary villains. I think of things like Raiders of the Lost Ark. You have, Belloc is the main, and then you have Todd, who's, the other villain in the beginning of the movie. He's just fantastic. He's just as good
yeah.
as the main villain. And I love it when you have somebody who's just as sinister in a horror movie, as a sidekick or...
He's probably the best developed character in the film.
Yeah, he's great.
Because everybody else is just sort of, the husband slash father is just this smiling dimwit.
Yeah.
The wife exists solely to be Frank's sexual plaything and to motivate her killing people.
Right.
And then the daughter just kind of flits in and out.
Kirstie?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought Kirstie's the hero, though. She's pretty much the heroine.
She is the hero. But for the first, you know, hour of the movie, she's just incidental to the story.
Yeah, they kind of... yeah, in the remake, they kind of do that, but not for as long. They introduce the heroine probably in the first 15 minutes. The remake, which is... It's kind of similar to the very first Hellraiser here, so it's worth mentioning. The opening scene's great. The opening scene's very good. And what they do with the actual puzzle box, and they tell you about the history of the puzzle box a little bit more. It's very... the way that they do it is very silly. It's basically she reads a book, you know, and she's read, you know, it's one of those ones where she opens up to that page of the book that has everything on it, even though it's like a 300-page book, like everything's on those two pages to tell the audience everything about the puzzle. So it tells you a little bit more about the puzzle box. The CGI that they use, the special effects they use for the puzzle box, really cool. And I don't like the heroine that much. There's only one person that's kind of real and has real reactions in the new one. But in the end of it, everybody's kind of incidental. You're like, yeah, everybody's going to die pretty much. But they make it also very woke. So if you enjoy seeing gay sex for no apparent reason and you love seeing straight sex for no apparent reason, it actually has nothing to do with the plot at all. There's just introduction of two people having sex and then an introduction a couple minutes later of a gay couple having sex. Don't know why. Maybe, I don't know, is Hulu becoming like the Skinamax of 2022?
No, it's a French film and that's what the French do these days. They have endless sex scenes in all their movies and that's art.
But they also make it where they're all teenagers and they're all like such adults, you know, they're so beyond, you know, where they are in the world. Like one of them's supposed to be a drug addict. And as a matter of fact, it's the heroine. And, you know, she never has a moment where she's not, you know, precocious and, you know, far beyond her years on figuring things out, you know. She's never really messed up other than the beginning of the movie where she's, you know, emotional and just wants to have a drink. She's a recovering alcoholic and she's supposed to be like 22 or whatever. I'm like, give me a break.
Well, she has
to try drinking for 30 years.
Someone in writing school said you have to have, your character has to have a flaw. So we gave her a flaw.
Of course.
She's a recovering alcoholic. This will never have any bearing on anything to do in the script.
Yeah.
Even though you're going to sit there for the whole 2 hours waiting for it to happen, it will never be mentioned again. We just want you to understand that she's a recovering alcoholic.
That's right.
Why bring it up if it's got no bearing on what's going to happen here?
That's right.
You know.
But I give it a marginal thumbs up because I was. It's funny because I saw this before Happy Birthday to Me, and I think that's why I enjoyed Happy Birthday to Me a little bit more this time, because I'm just like, this is entertaining. As like Hellraiser got boring.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going to happen? And it's very gory. I mean, it is very gory, especially they do the same thing with the chains, where the chains grab you and rip you apart or whatever. But they do something with the Cenobites in this one, which is really cool. And it's with the one that's the chatterer there. It's the female one that's the chatterer that you had mentioned that was sexy, you know, based on the boar queen later.
The chatterer is a teenage boy in the original.
That's right. In the original story.
Yeah.
In the original movie.
Yeah. When you see who the Cenobites are in the second film.
Yeah.
The chatterer is a teenage boy.
Okay. So, in this one, the only other thing about this that I noticed that I didn't like is it becomes a zombie movie where they're in this magical house where the person from the very beginning of the movie who knew all about the power of the box, and he was at the very last level, and then he actually gets what he wants, and we do see him. So he's like the Uncle Frank in this one. He's different. He's kind of he's like a philanthropist, or he makes himself out to be like a philanthropist in this, but he has like a big party, and it's kind of like the Tom Cruise, Stanley Kubrick, Eyes Wide Shut party at the beginning, and he lures somebody in to play with the box, and then the kid gets pricked, and then all of a sudden, you know, he gets killed, and the thing goes to the next level, and that's how they start out the movie, which is pretty cool. So you get to see him get his just desserts, because he gets exactly what he asked for. And he's dealt with it. They flash forward to 6 years later. So he's dealt with this unimaginable amount of pain for 6 years. Now, are you going to see this at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
I will.
So basically he has something happen to him. So he's constantly in pain. So every few seconds he can talk for a minute and then all of a sudden he's screaming in pain and then he'll be talking again. But they never really make it funny. Everything's a little too serious, yeah. I think.
And that kind of goes back to the first one because the first one takes itself very seriously.
Yeah, and the second one doesn't as much.
And it's like I say, it's an English horror movie.
Yeah.
The English weren't really known for doing splatter films.
Yeah.
And it's a splatter film. And it's, like I say, the production design of the film is a singularity. Everything that comes after Hellraiser looks like Hellraiser.
Mm.
Because Hellraiser had that kind of influence on everybody. But the film itself, I remember seeing it back in the day and thinking, yeah, that was, you know, when it came out in 1987, there was a lot of extreme gore floating around.
Yeah.
Tom Savini was still doing stuff. Reanimator came out around the same time.
Right, yeah, Reanimator was around there, yeah.
But there was something about the overall tone of Hellraiser that made it special.
Yeah.
The second film is just pure nonsense.
Yeah. It's got some funny parts in it.
It's got some funny parts in it.
It definitely winks to the horror crowd a little bit more in it, I think.
Nothing in the film makes any sense. There is no plot.
Yeah.
And this is, again, it's an English horror movie. And when the English don't know what to do in a story, they just have people run around corridors.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, hell, because they're supposed to be in hell, is some leftover sets from a King Arthur movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's all like gothic castle corridors that they're running through, and this is supposed to be hell.
Yeah.
The visual effects in the film are atrocious.
It's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun, but they're terrible.
I have to say this, though. I did enjoy this more as a teenager.
Yeah.
And it was only because you're a teenager, you're into gore more, you just kind of have that shock, like, oh my God, what are they doing? Like I was saying, I felt a little unclean watching these movies. I don't know. I feel weird being like in my 50s now and I'm watching something. I'm like, I probably would have liked this more as a teenager.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why I'm wasting my time on this now, but, you know, I tend to watch a movie from beginning to end. I'll be able to.
But,
you know,
for me,
I like to give it a run at least once.
For me, the worst thing about the second one is they try and they move the Cenobites to the margins of the film.
Yeah.
And Hellraiser is a great example of filmmakers who have no idea what they've got.
Yeah.
Because the first film was a hit because of the Cenobites.
Yeah.
It's not, everybody thought it was, oh, it's this story and, you know, the corpse walking around and Frank killing people and healing and the melting scene and all that stuff. No, the Cenobites are what brought people in.
Yeah.
So they come back for the second one. It's like, we want more Cenobites. The Cenobites are in it for like all of 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And they get killed because there's supposed to be some new super Cenobite in this whole thing.
Right, right.
Who is boring and nowhere near as compelling as they are.
Yeah.
So by the time they get to the third one, which is an American production because the UK film industry has completely imploded.
I only think I saw the third one once. Yeah.
The third one is about Pinhead. And it's like, finally, you get it. You understand what we want. We want more of these sexy, creepy weirdos who are like trying to do unspeakable things to innocent people.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. And by the way, have the girls take their tops off because that's what we're here for.
Is that what they do in that? There are a couple of them?
There is no nudity at all in the first one. In the second one, they've got one shot.
Oh, yeah?
Like one of the girls that gets
killed.
Is it a
Hank shot?
No, it's just your basic like...
Oh, I thought it would be some naked guy running around.
No, a topless woman.
Yeah.
By the third one, now they're like, oh, you want to see the young people... like having sex and then getting attacked by the Cenobites. Yes, that's what we've been trying to tell you.
Oh.
Thank you for finally getting it.
I don't know if I want to see that, but yeah, I guess.
It's
back then.
I think the part of the appeal of the Cenobites is it's S&M for normies.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing, too, that's fascinating to people with this, too, is just... Oh, I have to say, too, the new Pinhead is excellent, but she doesn't show up. It's a woman. She doesn't show up until, like, an hour and 15 into the movie. And like you were just saying, at the end of two, like, they're in it for 3 minutes and then they're gone.
I have seen footage of her.
She's good. Really good.
They CGI'd it instead of doing practical.
Yeah.
And it works. It looks... Yeah. That's what you want Pinhead to look like.
Yeah.
Because there are points in both of... In all the Hellraiser, the early ones, where, you know, it's obvious that that's a makeup effect, and the pins are kind of like bouncing around in weird ways. And you're like, really hard to take this seriously but right now.
Here's the thing about the hero and the heroes. They're awful. Like, you don't care about any of them.
Right.
And if you don't have anybody you're rooting for, you don't care.
Well, they're supposed to be terrible people.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right.
Because that's Clive Barker's aesthetic, which is it's all